Retromaniacs, welcome back to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum. This is episode 70, and I'm your host, Andy Godoy. So I'll tell you what, guys, we have got an absolutely fantastic episode lined up for you guys. We're going to talk to you a little bit about my favorite computer of all time. Let me quickly give you the show, lineup and tell you what we've actually got planned. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about our sponsors and how you can sponsor a show. I'll tell you a little bit about what I've been up to and what I've been playing. We've got some site news and announcements. We've got the Retro Asylum tour that I want to talk to you about. And then we've got a little conversation I want to tell you a bit about why I've chosen the ZX Spectrum, why the ZX Spectrum means so much to me, the ZX Spectrum I had, and which one I prefer now. So yeah, I just want to give you a little bit of history about my ZX Spectrum, basically. And then it's the main part of the podcast, the A to Z of ZX Spectrum. Now, I'll go on to why I've done A to Z a little bit later on. So first up, guys, I want to give a big special shout out to our sponsors. Now, this show basically is helped by you guys. We can't do the show without you. So first of all, big special thank you to Dino Dini, and that is the legendary programmer himself, Dino Dini, who helped us out when we were having a rough time with financial stuff with the podcast, and he came in and saved us, basically. So thank you very much, Dino. Really appreciate that. Next up, we've got one of our community members, Splatty. Then we've got Aaron White. Then we've got Michael Keith, Michael J. Hay, and Uniforix. So thank you very much, guys. And if you want to sponsor the Retro Asylum podcast, all you need to do is go to retroasylum.com. There's a little PayPal button on the front page, and if you click onto that, you can donate as little or as much as you like. You know, it really helps us, basically. So thank you very much, guys. So let me quickly tell you what I've been up to. So retro gaming wise, I've not really been up to a lot, really. I've had a whole week off work, and believe it or not, it's just with a wife and a baby, it's kind of hard to get any retro gaming in. You know, it's really tough. I've had to move my Xbox, which I've got my emulators and everything, away from the living room, because my little girl basically has got to that stage now where she's very curious and she's just poking fingers around, and I do not want her to get a bit of a shock. So I made the smart move of just getting rid of it, putting it into the shed, and when they've gone to bed, I can always get the Xbox out and play that, really. But what I have been doing today, actually, I've been playing around with the Super UFO Pro 8. Now, this was given to me by Uniforix, our co-host and friends. And yeah, I mean, I haven't tried it out yet, but what I've done, I've uploaded loads of ROMs onto an SD card, which I should have technically. But yeah, the Super UFO Pro 8 is probably the cheapest, best, for that price anyway, flash card. There are a lot better ones called the EverDrive, which, you know, maybe somewhere down the line I'll get. But for now, when I get the opportunity, I'm looking forward to playing the Super UFO Pro 8. Now, apparently you can't play games with an FX chip. So games like Star Fox, Yoshi's Island, you can't do. But if you have a game which uses the same flash card, like if you have the actual cartridge, it should work fine if you place it on top. So it lets you do that. It's a nice little toy. What do I plan on do then? What am I planning on doing, I should say? Well, over the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be playing a lot more retro gaming. I've decided the only time I could really do it is on the way to work. It's an hour commute, so I've got my PSP. I've got it loaded up with Spectrum, Commodore 64, Sega Master System. I can't get Super Nintendo to work or MAME, but I've got the Mega Drive, PC Engine. And I'll tell you what I have been doing. I've been playing a lot of Sega Master System games. There's certain games that are just really addictive. You know, I've been playing Action Fighter, which was a conversion of the arcade game. And in many respects, it's actually better on the Sega Master System. I prefer it. It's so much better. It's a completely different game. But the Master System version is a real challenge. You know, it's just one of those things that, how far can I get without actually dying? And it's normally to the second level, I think, once you've beaten the submarine bosses. There's another game that I've been playing as well, which is by Sega, which is Captain Silver. And again, the arcade game doesn't look that good, doesn't play that well, but there is two versions on the Sega Master System, and those two versions are the I think there's a US one and there's a European version. Now, the European version has got more levels and it's a little bit tougher, I think. The US one has got a lot of it cut out. It hasn't got the witch at the beginning, hasn't got like a certain level, I think. It's missing something completely. But I really like Captain Silver. It's a nice little game. It's a bit tough, but again, it's based on an arcade game, and arcade games were designed to swallow your money. So that's it, all I've been doing retro gaming wise. Right, so one of the things I do want to talk to you guys is the Retro Asylum podcast tour. And this is 2014. We're doing a live tour. And let me quickly explain why we're doing this live tour, guys. Now, I've been doing the podcast now for 2 and a bit years. I really enjoy it. It's nice sort of talking to the guys over Skype. It's even better when we get to do the podcast in person. And one of the best episodes we've done, which got us to the number one spot just before Christmas, was the Christmas party episode, which we recorded at Steve Perry's house, who's aka Starship UK, on the forums. And we had an amazing time there. We played loads of games at his house, arcade games. He had all these systems out. And because we were so hyped from that, we really came out with an amazing podcast. And it got me thinking, you know what? Why don't we take the show on the road? There's loads of retro gaming events, which I'm going to mention in a second. And we will be doing, basically, a live podcast. Right, so the first part of the tour begins at Geek 2014, which is on Margate, Kent, at the Winter Gardens. Now, we're doing the live tour on the 22nd of February, although the whole expo runs from the 21st, which is a Friday, up until the 23rd, which is a Sunday. Now, it's only a few weeks away, so if you guys want to come in and support us or check out an amazing event, check out Geek 2014. We can't wait for this. It's the first part of the tour. We're really excited, a little bit nervous, but nevertheless, it should be fun. Now, after that, we've got Play Expo, which returns to Blackpool at Norbrick Castle. And we can't wait to do this because Play Expo is one of the biggest events, retro gaming events in the UK. It's really something to basically see once you're there. You're going to get hundreds of computers, loads of arcade machines. And it's amazing that we're going to be doing a live podcast there on the Saturday at 3 p.m. Once again, the whole expo runs from the Saturday to the Sunday, but we will be there on the 3rd of May at Norbrick Castle. So again, definitely check it out. Feel free to come and support us. Now, the next event that we're doing in May is our very own Retromania 2. Now, Retromania 2, obviously, it's the follow-up to the event that we did last year, which was a little event. But you know what? We all had a nice time. We all sort of like chatted away. And I decided, let's do something different. And I want to give a big special thanks to a few people, first of all. I want to give a big shout out to Stuart and Dan from Play Nation Games. Now, Play Nation Games is a video game shop in Croydon. And these guys have basically kindly said we can use their shop to hold Retromania 2. So, again, it's not going to be a big event. You know, it's not the size of your event. It's actually what you do with your event which counts. And we're doing something a little bit different to all the retro gaming events that are actually coming up. We've got some competitions, some tournaments, some raffles. It's completely free. You know, all proceeds, money that will be walking around with a bucket will go to charity. We've got 3 live podcasts. It's going to be amazing. Yeah, I'm not just saying that because, you know, it's the show that I'm running, but it is going to be absolutely amazing. So if you live in London or the Croydon area, definitely check out Retromania 2 on the 26th of May. And even if you're around that area beforehand, pop into Play Nation Games and say hello to Stuart and Dan. Right, next up, we've got NERG 2014, which is in Tyne and Wear at Gateshead Stadium. And you know what? This is going to be probably one of the biggest events this year. Last year, it came out of nowhere and it was an amazing success. Everybody's told me such amazing things about it. A couple of weeks ago, we interviewed Philip from NERG, the organizer, and just talking to him, he really knows his stuff. He's really sort of pulled out all the stops to make this event happen. And we're recording a live podcast there on the 5th of July. And I can't wait to sort of do this because I've never been to that part of the country and I'm really looking forward to it. Next up, again, we have got Revival, which is at Wolverhampton Racecourse. And it's a lovely venue, actually. I really, really like it. It's got a hotel right next to it. It's got a nice feel. It doesn't feel too big, doesn't feel too small. It's a perfect size for a retro gaming event. And once again, we're recording there on the 9th of August, which is a Saturday, and it will be sometime in the afternoon. So again, guys, if you're a fan of the show and you listen to the show, please, you know, feel free to come along to these retro gaming events, watch our live show, cheer us on. We're going to do a bit of audience participation, you know, maybe get some of you up there. We'll be giving away some prizes. Let's talk about some of the prizes, actually. We have got some amazing prizes from funstock.co.uk. Now, I'll mention a little thing that we can do with them, but they're sending us a little prize that we will be giving away at Geek. And we've also been given a few other little prizes from Nintendo themselves that we'll be giving, you know, be giving away at Geek. So at all these events, we will be giving away some amazing stuff. So, you know, it's definitely worth checking out. Now, I just mentioned funstock.co.uk. Now, they're one of our sponsors as well. Now, if you go down to funstock.co.uk, if you want to buy something like a USB N64 controller, you can probably buy it for about $9.99. But if you type in the promo code ASYLUM, you get 10% off that. So that is a real, real deal. So definitely check it out. So check out funstock.co.uk. Now, to help us support the Retro Asylum tour, what I would say, guys, is head on over to retroasylum.com. We have got somewhere on the news section, you know, about this t-shirt we've got. And it's an amazing t-shirt, you know. Big special thanks to Mr. Sid, who amended the design, which was, you know, like the logo, which was created by Swaney. And it's an amazing Retro Asylum t-shirt. It really helps to support us, you know. It's amazing when we go to these retro gaming events and we see our listeners wearing these t-shirts. It's unbelievable. Last year, when we went down to play, there was quite a few people wearing Retro Asylum t-shirts. So please feel free to support us. It really helps us out. You'll see it somewhere on the front page at retroasylum.com. So the next part of the podcast I want to talk about is we had a little competition, which was basically thanks to Aaron. And Aaron goes by the name of AaronUB40 on Twitter. And he got us some Ocean goodies. And all you had to do to win the Ocean goodies was basically go on Twitter, hashtag Retro Asylum Podcasts, and complete the sentence, I want to win the Ocean goodies because... And the winner of that competition was... Let me just pull a name out of a hat. And the winner is TMC Kinin. I think that's correct. So it's TMC Kinin. So if you can, please contact AaronUB40, which is AaronUB40. I'll send Aaron your details on Twitter, and then you can sort it out between you guys. So congratulations, mate. Congratulations. We will be having another prize that we will be giving away, which I still haven't got my hands on yet, but we'll probably do it the week after next. We'll give away a really amazing prize, actually. So moving on to some news. Now, there is another reason why I've left this podcast a little bit closer to the actual day, you know. I was meant to be releasing on the Friday, but had a few things happening. And then a few things started appearing on the Twitter pages and on different retro gaming forums. And that is all about the ZX Spectrum Kickstarter by Elite. Basically, if you haven't seen it, Elite are doing a Kickstarter. And it's complete now. It's completely backed. It's a Bluetooth ZX Spectrum. And it is basically a 48K model. And it basically is Bluetooth, and it's meant to coincide. It works with the Elite apps. But what's been happening, believe it or not, that there's been some allegations and some questions that the owners of Elite, you know, games, they haven't really been paying royalties to some of the programmers. They've, and some of the other programmers as well, have said like they've just used the game without them actually even without their permission. So it's, you know, all a bit bizarre, actually. So loads of people have basically gone on to the Kickstarter thing. People that have donated the money, say, for example, they've donated £50. They've just taken that down to £1 so they can at least comment on it. And if you go to the Kickstarter page for the Bluetooth ZX Spectrum, Now, a lot of this has sprung up over the last couple of days as the Kickstarter has been sort of nearly finished, and now it has finished. We've got loads of people. It's been absolutely everywhere, all over the internet. And it's just basically people just saying they haven't been paid any royalties. Some games have just been used without their permission. It's just crazy. So loads of people are angry with Elite, basically, saying that how can they do this? You know, that, you know, they wouldn't support someone like that. So what I want to find out from you guys is, did you support this Kickstarter? And did you change your mind with this Kickstarter campaign, you know, after reading or hearing everything that's actually happened? Or did you not pledge at all? And what's your view on all this that's basically been happening? So you can comment on this on the front page of the Retro Asylum podcast. Now, on a lighter note, what I do want to talk about actually is one of my favorite games, well, the sequel to one of my favorite games is coming to the iOS, and that is R-Type 2. Now, I'm a big fan of the first R-Type game. It's one of the toughest games around there, and I know that's actually available on iOS. And basically, the follow-up, the sequel, is being developed and published by Dotemu, and it's going to be coming out in the next couple of weeks. And it's just, it's a great game, basically. It's a great follow-up. It's a lot tougher, I thought, than the first R-Type game. And it's one that you should definitely check out. I can't imagine it costing more than £1.99. So definitely check out R-Type 2 when it does come to iOS and Android devices. So that's me all newsed up.
Welcome to the Retro Asylum.
Right, so I want to talk a little bit about why I've decided to do an A to Z or ZX Spectrum. But before I actually go on to doing that, let me quickly give you a little bit of history why I love my ZX Spectrum so much. Go back in time about when I was about 9 or something like that. I had just lost my Atari 2600 Junior. My mum had given it away to one of my family members in South America, so I was left without a console, which I absolutely really loved. So then one of my family members, I think it was my cousin, and I think some of my friends actually, had a C64. I absolutely loved the C64. The C64 had amazing music, had amazing graphics. The games or conversions of the arcades, you know, you could get budget games for $1.99. You know, no longer was I spending all this money. Well, my parents spending over 20 something pound on cartridges, you know, you could get games for $1.99. So I begged and begged and begged and begged my parents to get me a C64. Christmas came along. I got a ZX Spectrum Plus 2. At first, I was really disappointed. I didn't want the ZX Spectrum. I'd heard all the kids at school talk about the ZX Spectrum, saying how terrible it was, how the audio was nowhere near as good as the C64, the color clash. But regardless, the version I got, I think, was the ZX Spectrum Plus 2A, or was it? Maybe it wasn't. It was the gray one. And I think I got 6 or 8 games included with it. And they weren't the greatest games, so let me tell you about some of the games I had. I had Treasure Island, which was probably one of my favourite games. What else did I have? Crazy Golf, Oh Mummy, Punchy, Disco Dan. It was like a Space Invaders clone. And again, like I said before, none of the games were that good, but still, because it was given to me, it was over Christmas holidays, I still played it. So over the holidays, I just carried on playing these games, and my favourite probably were Treasure Island. And again, you know, it didn't have much colour clash. The game was in full colour. Not every game, you know, was as good as that. Some of the games were really sort of like basic, basically. Crazy Golf wasn't visually good, but I still enjoyed it nevertheless. And over the following year, I started going to the shop to get games. I used to go to Woolworths, or I used to go to my local newsagent, or to the nearest chemist, basically, and they all sold games. You could get games on a little rack for $1.99. Now, there were the full price games, which are the newer games, and a lot of the newer games were arcade conversions, and that's what I loved. You know, I love my arcade conversions, you know. I used to play arcade games in the local chip shop or in the swimming pool or when the fun fair basically came around, and it was just an amazing experience, you know, reading my ZX Spectrum magazines like Crash or Your Sinclair or Sinclair User, and it was talking about the latest arcade conversion that was coming out, and I'd wait a couple of weeks and then I'd buy that game, and then it was an amazing experience. Basically, just to give you an example, I remember when Shadow Warriors was coming out. Now, I played the arcade game, and the arcade game was not as good as Double Dragon, not as good as Final Fight, but, you know, at that age, I used to love anything with ninjas or, you know, scrolling beat-em-ups. So, you know, I still enjoyed that. And I had a guy with a hockey mask, which was like Jason from Friday the 13th. So I saw the reviews on the ZX Spectrum magazines, and I couldn't believe how amazing the graphics were. You know, the graphics were big, bold, full color. And I know Sweeney doesn't like the graphics and, you know, that the way they do it, because they look a bit too chunky and it's got the big black outline. But I think it's an amazing achievement for the ZX Spectrum, you know, how they managed to do that. You know, there were other amazing games on the ZX Spectrum as well, like, you know, Popeye or Trapdoor. Those were done by Don Priestley or Priestley. You know, what could be done with the ZX Spectrum when programmers really knew it was an amazing thing, you know. Sometimes games really didn't work well, like the conversion of Double Dragon, which, to be honest with you, is really, really, really poor. It just, I think it had too much in the background, the playability wasn't there. But then you had other games like Target Renegade, which wasn't an arcade conversion, it was a follow-up to an arcade conversion. And it was superb. It's probably one of my best scrolling or flip screen beat 'em ups ever. The playability is definitely there. So, over the years, you know, I stayed with my ZX Spectrum for absolutely ages. I think I stayed with it up until sort of, I think I even played loads of ZX Spectrum games. Even when I had my Sega Master System, I always went back to the ZX Spectrum, because the ZX Spectrum, there always seemed to be more games available, and for the prices that you could get the games, it really made it worth it. You know, don't get me wrong, I mean, I had Ghostbusters on the ZX Spectrum, which was really, really poor. The sample speech was horrifying. I suppose it worked to its advantage, but it had horrible, you know, it was color clash, it was monochrome in certain areas. And, you know, on the Sega Master System, it was full color, it had all these amazing things, but, you know, just, I stayed with the ZX Spectrum. Like I said, it was just my first machine. It's like your first love, you know, you never forget about it. And this is one of the reasons why I've decided to do a podcast, basically, on the ZX Spectrum. Now, I did think I could do my favorite ZX Spectrum games, like a top 10, but I think it'd be a little bit too predictable. And then, so I thought, let's do an A to Z. Now, I think this will work a lot better, because some of the letters, basically, I've been trying to figure out which games go for that letter, and this, you know, later on, I really struggle, but it makes it more of an interesting way of doing, you know, like my favorite games, by doing an A to Z. So, without further ado, let's begin the A to Z of the ZX Spectrum. Right, so first of all, the first game I want to talk about is ATV Simulator. Now, from the get-go, once this game started loading up, you had, like, a guy on an ATV, you know, machine, an all-terrain vehicle on the loading screen. It was really sort of nicely detailed. I think, if I remember right, it was like a black screen and the characters all done in yellow. And then the music kicked in, and it was amazing music by David Whittaker. And I forgot to mention, you know, it was like published by Codemasters, but the music by David Whittaker sold me on this already. You know, it was just unbelievable, really catchy, and it's probably one of my favorite tunes ever to this day. It's just so, it's so amazing, it really is. Now let's talk about ATV Simulator then. It kind of plays like Kickstart 2. Don't know if you guys have played that. Kickstart 2 was split screen. You had two little motorbikes, you know, you had to race against each other, and you had like an obstacle course. But this was slightly different. It wasn't as easy, it was harder, you know. You didn't have unlimited lives. You had to get to the end, and if you failed because of lack of time, you lost. But it was ingenious, because it really kept on, you know, making you come back of all the little sort of things you had to try and avoid. and all the different scenes, you know, like all the different levels or different areas all around the world. So it gave it character. And again, the game wasn't monochrome, but again, you know, like the first level was the desert, so the whole level, you know, the whole, it's very yellow, but it's smartly done. The second level, I think, was somewhere in the snow, so again, it's all white. But they used the graphics to its advantage, and the graphics were pretty big and nicely animated, but there was nothing quite like playing this game in two players. You know, like one of my friends, he really sort of had mastered it, like the first couple of levels, and that really got me sort of practicing the game, and it really became competitive. I don't think I've actually ever finished the game, but it's a great game nevertheless. And if you haven't checked it out, check out ATV Simulator, which is by Codemasters. Now, next up, the next game I want to talk about, B, is Batman the Movie. Talked about this game loads. I think a lot of the Retro Asylum co-hosts love this game as well. Some of them like it on the C64, some on the Amiga. It's an amazing, basically, a game. It's one of the best film licensees on the 8-bits and 16-bits. A lot of film licensees didn't really do well, but this had like a nice variety of different levels, and they sort of like took a leaf out of the page after they'd done the amazing RoboCop. Now, the first level in Batman, you're sort of like in the factory, and it's like a platformer, and you've got the music there, and it's just, the music's done by Matthew Cannon again, and the music really adds to the amazing game. And again, on the ZX Spectrum, now the graphics are all monochrome, but they're very, very detailed, they're very big, they're very sort of like high res. It's just, it looks really, really good. But what I love about the game is just like, the levels aren't too overly big. You know, and it's just that right difficulty level where, you know, you get that little bit further every time. Like the second level is you're in the Batmobile and you have to swing onto the lamppost to sort of like cut round corners, and you're racing against time. The third level is sort of like a puzzle level, which I could never quite figure out. And I remember basically just sort of like pressing all the buttons and somehow getting through it regardless. And I think the fourth level is when you're on the Batwing. And again, it's just, there's so much variety to this game, which really makes it worthwhile. So yeah, again, I was a big fan of the Batman movie by Tim Burton. So let's move on to the next one. Now next up, for C, we've got Chase HQ. I absolutely love this game. Now, playing the arcade and playing it on the computer, very different but very the same, because in the arcade, basically, you had the steering wheel, you know, you had the pedals, you know, you could change gear, and that is something that normally when you play it on a home computer sort of loses something. But regardless, you know what they managed to do with the ZX Spectrum version of Chase HQ is unbelievable. It was programmed by Bill Harrison, and the music was done by Jonathan Dunn, and they've really managed to fit pretty much a whole arcade game in a ZX Spectrum. How on earth they managed to do that, I have no idea. I mean, for a start, you've got the amazing loading screen with Chase HQ, and it's very sort of like 80s, sort of like Miami Vice sort of feel. You know, you've got the guys holding the gun, and it's beautiful artwork, basically. And it's a game done by Ocean, I forgot to mention. But what I love about it is the all the sample speech, the music. But it's not just that, though. It really looks like the arcade game, but somewhat scaled down. But it still works. Their playability still works in this game. Now, you had games like Power Drift, you had games like Outrun, which really didn't work well on the ZX Spectrum, you know. And you'd think that it couldn't do something like this, but the ZX Spectrum version of, you know, Chase HQ has everything. It's got the speed, it's got slight little bumps, it's got little things that you can crash into, it's got the turbo boost, you know, and it moves at such a fast pace that it really draws you in. Now, I actually prefer Chase HQ on the ZX Spectrum than I do in the arcade. I just can't get used to the arcade, but I prefer it on the ZX Spectrum. It's just one of those games that I think works better on the 8-bit systems. And just to see what an achievement it is, if you compare it to some of the other systems, like the C64, which was absolutely terrible, it's a Game Boy version. Again, it didn't quite work as well as a ZX Spectrum. Then you had it on the Sega Master System, which is absolutely appalling as well. Now, I know sometimes you get some other sort of computer owners at the time, which were the C64 owners or Amstrad or Amiga owners. Or maybe it might even work to this day where, maybe you get some younger members of your family that look at certain games and think, well, it doesn't work. But I'd say this is the perfect game to show them, really, because it really works way better than a lot of the other conversions, basically. So it really showcases the ZX Spectrum to its full abilities, really. It's this beautiful bit of programming, beautiful music. So, yeah, they've done really well. So move on to the next game. Now, next up, we have got Draft Genius. Now, I really love this game. Let me tell you a little bit of history about this game. I first got this as a freebie. I think it was in Crash Magazine. And that was one of the things about having, a ZX Spectrum back in the days. You could get demos of full games in these magazines. And I used to love my magazines for that reason. And I used to play all of them. Some of the games were good. Some of the games were absolutely terrible. And I thought, why not put this game on? Draft Genius. And the game loads up, and you've got a loading screen, and it's basically Einstein. So you're going to play drafts against Einstein. Now, how exciting can a game of drafts be? Not very, but if you're playing against Einstein, and it's programmed really well, and it's got a lot going for it, then it is really, really, really good. Now, the first thing that strikes me is the music. And then it's got a nice little animation where I believe it's a programmer's and they're dancing around while one of the other guys is basically playing the piano. And then it goes on to the main screen, which is beautifully done, actually. It's got like a nice big cartoon style image of Einstein, and occasionally he's animated where he's thinking and so on. And everything's so clearly done, all the pieces, the perspective of it is really done. It's done really well, I should say. And I've never managed to beat Einstein. It's a great game, and it's probably my favourite drafts game to this day, I mean, sometimes, if I'm bored, I'll play drafts with my wife or with my friends, but the best way to play drafts, guys, honestly, is this game. It's, I don't know how they managed to do it. It's beautifully programmed. Again, it's ingenious at the fact that they've got Einstein, so it really, you want to try and beat him. You want to be better than Einstein, you want to be smarter than Einstein, but the thing is that the computer AI is so damn tough, so he always beats you. So that's my game I've got for D. We'll move on to the next one. We have got another arcade conversion, Enduro Racer. Now, again, I've mentioned this before. I love my ZX Spectrum because you could get amazing arcade conversions. I believe this game cost $9.99 when it first came out. It was the arcade game was done by Sega. And what I loved about Sega back in the day was that they did some amazing games. If you go through Golden Axe, Space Harrier, Afterburner, Outrun, there were absolutely loads of games that, as a youngster, you just couldn't wait for them to come out on your 8-bit micro or 16-bit machine. And when I first got Enduro Racer on the ZX Spectrum, I was really impressed. It feels and looks like the arcade game. Now, what I love about this game, okay, first of all, the music is pretty good. It sounds like the arcade game, as good as it can on the ZX Spectrum. But the main graphics on the main sprites on the game are there. Okay, and again, it uses the colour scheme really smart. The first level you're in a forest or in the countryside, so it's all green. The second level you're in a desert, so it's all yellow. So they play with the colour scheme. But what I like about it, again, is the playability's there. It works really well, and it's got a nice illusion of speed. And when you're talking about illusion, what I like about this game is that the arcade game was famous for having like hills and bumps So let's talk about the hills. You know, the hills, you know, it feel like you're going up and down. It wasn't one straight path that you were following, you know. So it really had the illusion that you were going up and down some slopes. And then you had like the ramps as well. So to pull off the ramps really well, what you had to do was sort of like lean back a little bit and then move forward, and you'd sort of like avoid all the stones and everything that were down there. And this was a great conversion by Active Vision, you know. It was really, really good. And there was always a little cheat that I could do as well. I don't know if you guys know this as well. Now, if you timed it right and you sort of like move all the way to the right of the screen and you did a wheelie, if you hit it correctly, you'd constantly be doing a wheelie and you could just go through the whole game without getting hit, without getting, you know, crashing or anything like that. And that's how I finished that game. I mean, it's really, really tough. I've played this again on the C64 and it paled in comparison. It's really terrible, that version. The Sega Master System version, you know, it was like an isometric thing, very basic looking. So if you're after a really good conversion of Enduro Racer, you know, look no further than the ZX Spectrum version, which is a great game. Beautiful music too. Right, next up is F. Now this might be a little bit predictable. Now if you think F, and for our listeners that know me, what game begins with F? Yep, it's Fantasy World Dizzy. Now, I love my Dizzy games. I know Matt Dinaris can't stand the Dizzy games, but I think they're fantastic. The Oliver Twins, absolute geniuses, and I, you know, it was amazing when I finally got to interview them for the podcast. I met them at, you know, Revival at Wolverhampton Racecourse last year, and it was great just basically talking to the Oliver Twins about, you know, their game. And that's what I love about the Oliver Twins. They love talking about their game, you know. They've got such pride. So let's talk about Fantasy World Dizzy. This is the third game in the Cartoon Adventure games. There were games, I think, that came out before this, you know, which were arcade-style games, but this, to me, is where I think Dizzy peaked. Don't get me wrong, Magic Land Dizzy is pretty good. Prince of the Yorkfolk's pretty good. You know, starts losing its way with Spellbound, and Crystal Kingdom, my god, that was terrible. But Fantasy World Dizzy was the third in the series, and I think they got everything perfect in this game. Now, for those of you that don't know, Dizzy is a cartoon adventure game. You walk along, you pick up objects. But what I think they did right with this, they introduced quite a few good elements, you know. Not only, now I should say, you could pick more than one item. The first Dizzy game, you could pick one item, you'd have to drop one item, go to the other place, collect another item, and it really drove you insane. The second one, you could pick up three, but it scrolled upwards, so there was always that danger that if you did something wrong, you'd lose your item, and if it happened underwater, it was game over. What I loved about Fantasy World Dizzy was that the inventory system worked fantastic. You'd sort of like click onto something, and then you could sort of choose whether to drop something or pick something else. You'd highlight it, so you could pick three things, which is really, really good, you know? Perfect way to do it, the inventory system. The other good thing was that you introduced the Yorkfolk. You know, you had Dizzy wasn't just alone this time. You had all these amazing characters, his family, scattered all around this amazing land. And the whole fantasy aspect of it, you know, you had dragons, you had like a cave of illusion, which was just like, you know, it was hard, it was tough to find. But then you had little hidden stuff, like when you go to Dozy, you know, you can wake up Dozy, but you could be really mean afterwards as well. If you keep on kicking him, like you do when you sort of like highlight over him and press the button, if you keep on doing that, you kick him off into the pier and the water, and he starts floating off. And it's just got so many beautiful little touches like that as well. And it's not a hard game to find. But the other great thing about this game as well was that, you know, just finding the gold coins, you know, to complete the game, you had to find the gold coins. And that was introduced in Treasure Island Dizzy, but I think it worked better on this one. You know, again, Fantasy World Dizzy, I think, is probably the greatest game that the Oliver Twins actually done. You know, it's a beautiful game, and I highly recommend it. And again, I'm going to stop talking about Dizzy now, because I can talk about Dizzy forever. Let's move on to the next letter, which is G. Now, this one is The Great Escape. Now, I remember before I got my ZX Spectrum Plus 2, going around to one of my friend's house. I think must have been about 8 years old, maybe a bit younger, and he had a ZX Spectrum Plus 3, which was a disc version of it. Now, the ZX Spectrum Plus 3, the audio wasn't as good as the Plus 2. There was just something wrong with the sound level. But I think Sweeney says with a bit of smart soldering, you can sort of like fix that, and you know, it will sound pretty good. But what I loved about The Great Escape was, it's just the whole atmosphere, the setting of the game. You know, first of all, you're greeted with that amazing music in The Great Escape. You know, it's really, really catchy. You know, it sounds familiar, is familiar. And then the game begins, and it's a beautiful 3D isometric style game. It's all black, it's got white little dots, but everything is done amazing. I mean, I love the way the graphics look. I love the way the buildings look. You know, you're set in a prison environment, and the whole thing is, you've got to try and escape. And it really gives you a lot to do. I mean, it predates stuff like I don't know, what can I describe it to? Like Bully, or like Grand Theft Auto, because you have to go around, you can interact with characters, you have to be sometimes at certain stages, like when the roll call, you have to be there, otherwise, you know, you get found out, or you have to be in bed at certain times. And I love that area, so you can play around with it, you know, you can sort of like make up your own game within. It's a bit sandboxy, but again, you have to stick to it. And I've never finished this game. Like I said before, I used to just mess around with this game, which is probably why I never finished it. But it's beautiful. It obviously, you know, there was like the Land That Time Forgot, I think it was called, the follow-up, which was slightly better. But for me, I prefer the prison atmosphere of it all. You know, it just seems a little bit better. It seems a little bit more real rather than with dinosaurs. I didn't think the dinosaurs worked that well on the other game because it was small and so on like that. And that's why I prefer the Great Escape. And I love the puzzle elements to it as well. So if you haven't checked it out, definitely check it out, because it still looks beautiful, still plays well to this day. Right, next up is one of my other favorite games for H, How to Be a Complete Bastard. Now, this game is based on the book by Adrian Edmondson, How to Be a Complete Bastard. And again, I got this game on a magazine. I can't remember what magazine it was. It was a full game. And again, I used to love getting full games like on magazines. And basically, you play the character of Adrian Edmondson and you gatecrash a party. Now, what I love about this game, it's ingenious. It really is ahead of its time. It breaks the fourth wall in so many different ways. Right, the playing area, it's a split screen. You've got the top area and the bottom area. Now, you can switch the view of the character. So, say for example, you're by the stairs and you've got a coat rack, but if you press another key on the Spectrum, it changes the view, so you can be behind them or from the side view. So it works really well. You can see things that you can't see by messing around with the camera angles, basically. It's amazing the way they've done that. And the whole premise of the game is you've got to do bastardly deeds within the party to complete your bastard meter, and it spells out how to be a complete bastard. There's loads of tasks to do. I've never managed to do it. You know, I mean, you can go up to someone, there's a pen, you get to stab someone with a pen, and that basically gives you one letter that, you know, that you need to fill up. You know, there's another bit where you go into a bedroom and you can grab a sheet, and then later on you can basically put the sheet on and pretend you're a ghost. There's so many things like that are really good. I mean, there's a really good section where you come across like a pair of 3D glasses, and what you can do with 3D glasses is, you know, if you say put on 3D glasses, it goes to like what the old 3D glasses used to be, so it changes the color. The top bit of this screen is red and the bottom area, what was it, blue? And again, it's ingenious that it managed to do that. Now, one of the best things that really breaks the fourth wall with this game is like you go into this room and it's just like you find this computer. Now, you've got a number of different options, and it's amazing. And this really annoyed me. It really annoyed me. But let me just tell you what it did. So you had an option which was to break computer, throw computer, reset computer. Now, I chose reset computer. And bearing in mind that a game took anywhere between 5 or 10 minutes to load on your ZX Spectrum, but in this game, if you press reset computer, it actually reset the game. It really just, it turned off the game and you'd be back on the main title screen, of the ZX Spectrum, and you'd have to load the game all again. And again, I hated it, but it was such a smart move, you know, and that really predates all the stuff that, you know, they've done with Metal Gear Solid and all other, you know, games that use smart stuff like that. It's one of the best games ever. I'd love to sort of, you know, someone to do like a remake of this, like a fan remake, because it plays so well. Visually, it's beautiful, and there's so many, you know, I don't think it's possible to finish it, but it's always nice discovering what you can do. I mean, I just remember doing something, I can't remember what I did. I think I opened up an umbrella. Yeah, I think you can either throw an umbrella or something like that, and I opened the umbrella and your character turns into a refrigerator. It's just crazy, but it works. It's fantastic. It's probably one of the most underrated ZX Spectrum games ever, but it works to this day. You know, definitely check it out. Now, next up for I, we've got Ikari Warriors. This game. Now, I remember seeing the arcade game, you know, I think it was an SNK game, and you had like a little dial thing which controlled which way you shot and stuff like that. But my first memory of actually playing this properly was, again, on my family's other computers. Like, my cousin Alex, he had a ZX Spectrum. No, sorry, my cousin Alex had an Amstrad, and I loved it on the Amstrad. It was really vibrant. It was full of color. It was orange. It was, you know, the greenery. You know, you had your little Rambo lookalike characters. So it looked really well. And on the C64, you had that amazing music. You had that intro. And then you played it on the ZX Spectrum, which was, again, a bit monochrome. It was all yellow. You've got a bit of green. The intro music's pretty good, you know. It's nice. It's very similar to the Amstrad. But what I like about this version, which I prefer more than the C64 version, is it's a lot easier. You can get a lot further. But saying that, though, it's a hard game as it is. You know, you can't get that far regardless. You know, on the C64, I can't even get off the first level. On the ZX Spectrum, I probably get to about the third or fourth section. And the layout's very different to the C64 and to the arcade game. And I think even a little bit to the Amstrad as well. And that's what I loved about owning a ZX Spectrum, you know, back in the day. Because even though it was the same game, it was different. You know, you'd get a different conversion. You know, like from the C64, it played differently. And eventually when I did own all three machines as I got older, I'd see the differences in these games. And I still had to have all three different versions of the game. But the ZX Spectrum version, it's a great game. It's not quite as good as Commando, but it's still there, you know. It still holds up pretty well. It's one of the best shoot 'em up games on the ZX Spectrum. So I definitely recommend Ikari Warriors. It's a two-player game, which you can play with a friend as well. So we'll move on to the next one then. And the next game I've got on my list is Jack the Nipper 2. For long-time listeners, I've got to say this. Glenn Atkinson, who's one of our co-hosts, prefers the C64 version. Nope. The Spectrum version is better. Okay, you've got like an amazing sort of like music at the beginning on the intro. The C64's got music throughout the game. But you know what? I don't think the graphics are a patch on the ZX Spectrum. Now, what I love about the ZX Spectrum game is basically it's just, it's got a large playing area. It's a sequel to Jack the Nipper. I was never a big fan of the first Jack the Nipper, but I love this because it's like an explorer platform game. I knew you had to do something about your naughty meter. You had to do certain missions, but for me, I didn't play like this. I wanted to play this game on the ZX Spectrum and just explore randomly. Just kill things, collect coconuts, shoot things with the coconuts. And why I did this was because it was a beautiful looking game. The programmers, whoever they were, really used the, you know, the Spectrum to their advantage, because I think they use certain things to avoid color clash. The certain, you know, you walk behind objects as opposed to being in front of objects, so there is no color clash. And if you play a game like Dizzy, if you walk past the tree, your character is in front of the tree, so the character just turns into the same color as the tree. But in this game, you, I think he's in the background, because if you walk towards a tree, you're actually behind the tree. So, you know, there is no color clash, and it's just a nice little move, especially like when you've got little bits of blades of grass as well. You know, you're behind the grass, which is nice. It's a beautiful touch. And again, it was one of my favorite platforming games, and it's massive. You know, it's a massive game. You know, there's so much to see, there's so much to do. And it's one of my favorite games ever, which I still go back to. You know, I play it on my iPhone. I've got a little emulator on it, and I love playing it. You know, I'd love someone to do like I'd love this to come out actually. You know, like on an Xbox Indie or something like that, just completely reskinned. You know, it's that good. I think it's aged fantastically. So if you haven't checked out Jack the Nipper 2 in Coconut Capers, I highly recommend it. It's one of the most accomplished platforming games on the ZX Spectrum. Now next up, we've got Kay, and I've got another Dizzy game. I've got Quick Snacks. Now, I absolutely love this game. Again, I love the cartoon adventure Dizzy games. I thought they were the best. When it came to the arcade games, Dizzy games, I never thought they were that good. I always thought they were just cheap cashing games. You know, sorry Oliver Twins, sorry Codemasters, but I thought all the arcade games were cheap cash-ins. You had Bubble Dizzy, had Fast Food, which was a Pac-Man clone. They were all terrible, you know. I know some people like Fast Food. I think it's slow, I think it's horrible. But again, back in the day, I would buy anything with Dizzy on it, because that's how much of an iconic character he was back in the day. I loved that little wig, and I wasn't let down by this game, you know. The best thing is, if you play this game in 128K mode, what actually happened was you got a whole intro, you know. It was amazing. You know, you start off like with a Dizzy mob, and that's Dizzy on the guitar, and Grandpa Dizzy sort of like beatboxing, and you had Denzel playing the piano and Daisy doing something else. It was just an amazing experience. And then once you've done that, it goes into a story mode, and the story mode has different music. It's got large sort of like sprites on the screen where it's like a story basically. It tells you, you know, it's amazing the way they've done this. I've never seen since anything like this on the ZX Spectrum. And if any of you guys know where they've done something like this on the ZX Spectrum, please let me know. The music was done by Lyndon Sharp, who I think is so vastly underrated when it comes to gaming music, because what he managed to do on this game on a 128K was just phenomenal. You know, there's so much music going on, the music's so energetic, and there's like so many different levels. Well, there's not so many different levels. There's like the level for Granddad Dizzy, Dylan, Dozy, and one of the other characters, so it varies, and each level's got a theme, so the music corresponds to that basically. And it plays like Pengo, you know, you got to push blocks. So it's sort of like Pac-Man as well, but it's so well done. The graphics are nice, it's colourful. Yeah, it's a bit of colour clash there, but you soon forgive that. The biggest letdown is, though, the game is too easy. But again, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because this is one of the sort of games that, if I've got 10, 15 minutes or, you know, 20 minutes, I can just sort of load it up on my emulator, play it, and that just keeps me happy, and I think, yeah, I finished this game, that was good. It's just one of those games that I always find myself coming back to. It's just so addictive, so playable. And you know what, I've got to say once again to Glenn Atkinson, if you're listening to this podcast, the C64 is a horrible version. If you play the C64 version, it's terrible, it's absolutely terrible, it's a completely different game. Glenn seems to absolutely love that version for whatever reason. Glenn, I think you're insane. I think, you know, you've lost your mind. It's a terrible version, you know. Like, the Spectrum version is the best. No doubt about it. Alright, move on to the next game. Right, next up we have L, and for L we have Lemmings. Now, I played the demo of Lemmings, and I wasn't really sort of drawn into this game back in the day. I just thought, what is the fuss? I knew it was a conversion of an Amiga game and an ST game. I just didn't, and they were going about how amazing this game was on the ZX Spectrum. So I never bought the full price game. I just played the demo and I really didn't get it. I just thought it was overhyped. I thought it was absolutely rubbish. And then as years went on, you know, I got myself like an emulator on my laptop and so on. I started going through some old games. And then, you know, I played Lemmings on other machines like the Super Nintendo, Mega Drive, Master System. And then eventually I played it on the Amiga via emulation again, guys. And that's when I thought, let me check out the ZX Spectrum version again. And you know what? After all these years, you know, I can't remember when Lemmings first came out. I actually like it on the ZX Spectrum because it's all there, you know. All the levels are there. Fair enough, again, the graphics are monochrome, but it looks like the Amiga version. It looks like the ST version minus the colour. It moves at a decent rate. There's no slowdown. Again, it's a little bit hard to control, you know, with the keys. And sometimes the Lemmings do all mesh together a little bit, but it's still an accomplishment. So I can see what all the reviewers in the magazine back in the olden days, you know, were saying about this game was actually correct, you know. And that's what I love about emulation, guys. I'm going off on a bit of a tangent here, but you can play games again, you can see it through new eyes, you can appreciate what they managed to do at the time. And I think this is why I love Lemmings. You know, the same thing goes for, I think, Shadow of the Beast. It's a great game. Again, it was an Amiga game. Been playing on emulation on, you know, on the Amiga thing, and I love it. I love the ZX Spectrum Shadow of the Beast. You know, it's not as good as the Amiga version, but it still looks pretty nice. The music's phenomenal. But again, Lemmings, an amazing game. It's up there with all the other versions. Highly recommend it. Right, so next up, we have got Manic Miner. Now, Manic Miner is one of the earlier ZX Spectrum platforming games, which completely transformed platforming games. To be honest with you guys, I never really played it when I first got my ZX Spectrum Plus 2, because that was a good couple of years afterwards, you know, after Manic Miner had come out, so I was too busy playing a lot of arcade conversions, and it wasn't until towards the end of my ZX Spectrum lifespan that, you know, I thought I'd give it a go, you know. And to be honest with you, I wasn't too keen on it. I just was put off by the difficulty level, which, to be honest with you, is just the first level. The first level that Matthew Smith created is possibly the toughest level in the whole, you know, the whole game. And fast forward to just a few years ago, again, thanks to emulation, you know, I decided to play it to see if I could get past a few levels after maybe seeing it on Retro Gamer magazines, all the different levels, and I thought, I'll give it a go. And then I kept on practicing, and managed to get through the first level. I think I can get now to about the 6th or 7th level. It's a pretty good game. It's one of those games that feels like an arcade game, really. It's just, if you've got 10 minutes to play, let's see how far you can go. Give yourself a certain amount of, like, lives. Say, okay, I'll have 3 continues. Once I die, I'll give it another go. And that's when the game really starts getting, you know, like, really, really good. It's also a good fun party game as well. Like, if you have a few people around, you know, it's always like, you know, let them see how good they can do. And the beauty of it as well now, it's also available on the Xbox Indie, so you can play it on the Xbox 360. So, again, if you've got people around, just get an Xbox control pad out and see how far they can get, you know. Just give them, like, the whole 3 lives or however much lives they've got in the game, and see if you can get that a little bit further. Honestly, it's so much fun. The game's ingenious. Matthew Smith, like, what he created as of that age was just an amazing game, you know. He was inspired a lot by Monty Python and the whole British culture and humour of it all. But I love all the baddies. I love the way the graphics look. And when you think about it, he achieved a lot for the early days of the ZX Spectrum. You know, it was a lot better than, you know, Jet Set Willy. I prefer it, and it's one of my favourite ZX Spectrum games. So That's one to definitely check out. Next up for N, we have the New Zealand story. Now, I love the arcade game. I think before I got it on the ZX Spectrum and played it on the 8-bit computers, I'd only probably played it 3 times my whole life before it. But again, it's time where you see it advertised in magazines, and it had the beautiful sort of like artwork by Bob Wakelin that he had designed. It drew me towards it, and I can't remember what it was, your Sinclair or Sinclair user, but I saw that and I went off to New Covent Garden Market, and it was just one of those things that when you bought the new game, it would have screenshots in the back, and it would be like the C64 version or the Amstrad version, and you'd look at the ZX Spectrum version and think, ooh, it's not in colour, but the sprites do look good. And that's one of the things I loved about the ZX Spectrum. Okay, it lacked the colour, it didn't have the musical oomph of, say, the C64, but what it did have was, beautiful high-res graphics that they look more like their arcade counterpart. Now, New Zealand Story, it's got its pros and it's got its cons on the ZX Spectrum. Okay, for a start, I think the graphics look very, very similar to the arcade game. If you strip away all the colour, you've got the ZX Spectrum version. What lets it down, unfortunately, is the jerky scrolling. It really shudders along, and it's sort of like if you're jumping from one little platform to another, you could really miss it for that reason. But if you can get past those things, it's a really great game. Now, I remember I got really good at the ZX Spectrum game. I really practiced it. I really just played it non-stop. And I don't know how I did this back then, because I try and play it now, I can't get anywhere. But I got towards the last level, and I think it was multi-loading. I think for some reason I was loading it in 48K mode. So I was loading all the levels one by one. And I got to the last level, which was when you're meant to be fighting against a walrus boss, and it just wouldn't load. It was load error. So I tried to do it again, and it's exactly the same thing. So for years and years and years, I didn't play that again. And I'll tell you what, how does it hold up against the other 8-bit versions? To be honest with you, a lot of people prefer the C64 version, but I think the graphics look a little bit ugly. Yeah, they've got amazing music, and the colours all there. The Amstrad, again, is like the ZX Spectrum, a lot brighter. You have got the amazing NES version and the Sega Master System version. You've got the Mega Drive version. But I reckon as conversions go, Ocean did an amazing job on the New Zealand Story. It's a great game. And when you think about how many levels they managed to squish into, a little cassette tape, I don't know how they managed to do it, because at this point, I found arcade games were getting a lot bigger. You had your previous arcade conversions like Donkey Kong, Mario, which they weren't really, really good, but you can understand how they managed to squeeze it in. But when you had big games with scrolling and massive playing area, it made you wonder how they managed to do it, especially when the programmers probably, played a couple of goes on the arcade machine and they had to sort of like recreate it that way. It was very unusual that, that they played it non-stop from the level, and if they did, they would have to play it and then work it along as it did like that. It's amazing. It really is ingenious. So let's move on to the next game then. Right, so the letter O. We've got Operation Wolf. Now, again, these arcade conversions, it was a little bit tough because the arcade game had a gun. It wasn't necessarily a light gun, but I think it used some sort of mouse to move around the screen, if memory serves me right. I don't think it was actually a proper light gun, but it really felt like, the gun felt heavy from memory, just remembering it, and just aiming it around, had to be as accurate as possible. And it was just one of those things you're thinking, how could it work on the ZX Spectrum? I don't think you could use a light gun on it, because I know there was a light gun on the ZX Spectrum. I don't think you could do it, but you could use it on a keyboard or a joystick. And graphically, the game is not too bad. Again, it looks like the arcade game. You strip away all the colour, and it it's, you know, sometimes it's a bit messy, the screen, but I think it worked. But it's one of those games that it lacked that light gun action. It, you know, just by doing that, it missed something already, you know. And I don't think it was one of the best conversions ever on the ZX Spectrum. You know, they could have done a lot better on it, but you know, all in all, it wasn't a bad game. So we'll move on to the next letter. Next up then, we have Pang. Now, I absolutely love the arcade game. The arcade game is two players, it's fantastic. I played it a couple of times in the arcade originally. I remember when I got my Super Nintendo a good couple of years afterwards. I rented it out because I used to rent out games from a little video shop. And then I just found out that it was actually on the ZX Spectrum. And this is when my ZX Spectrum, I hadn't really, I think I'd left it really. I'd moved on to the 8 bits and the 16 bit consoles. And I thought, I'll give it a go. I must have borrowed a version of someone on the ZX Spectrum. And you know what? What an amazing conversion this game is. You've got the whole intro. It is just the arcade with minus the colour. It's two players, you know, it doesn't lose any speed, especially when loads of things start happening on the screen. The collision detection is fantastic, the sound effects are there, the music's there, and it one-ups the Super Nintendo, whereas the Super Nintendo is meant to be Super Pang, or Super Buster Bros. This, you know, has two players, where the Super Nintendo only has one. And I think the Super Nintendo's missing a few levels, and I don't think the collision detection's as good as the ZX Spectrum version, which is amazing. You play the ZX Spectrum in two players, and if you play the arcade game, it's pretty much identical. It's one of the greatest arcade conversions. It's such an easy game to get into, and it's really impossible to put down. I tend to play this now on my emulation on my PSP. I've got a ZX Spectrum emulator, and I love playing this on the way to work. It's amazing. I'd love to play the original on the way to work, but sadly I can't get MAME on my emulator, so the ZX Spectrum version, like I said, is as close to the arcade game as you can possibly imagine, really. So yeah, definitely worth checking out. Pang, if you haven't played it already on the ZX Spectrum, give it a go, guys. Now next up, we have got Quartet. Now throughout the podcast, in the background, we've been putting in music, but for Quartet, I couldn't find any music for the ZX Spectrum. Now, I remember playing this back in the day, and I can't really remember whether it's got music. On my emulation, I can't get the game to actually work. I've looked on YouTube, I can't find music for the game, so I'll just have to go via memory. Now, Quartet, the arcade game, was four players, hence why it's called Quartet. It was an arcade game by Sega, and again, Sega made the best arcade games ever. It had amazing music, which really drew you into playing their arcades. I think I must have played the arcade game in Kennington Park when the funfair came round, and straight away I was drawn into this game because, you know, it was futuristic. You had little rocket packs, you could shoot like lasers, or like, you know, little, I don't know what sort of shape they were, like sort of like a crescent shape sort of things. And I got it on the ZX Spectrum because, again, I used to love getting any arcade conversions. And to be honest with you, I didn't think it played that bad. Yet again, the scrolling was affected. There was loads of colour clash. Don't think it was four players. It was three players, if memory serves me right. Probably, I'm going slightly off track here, the best conversion, which actually plays better than the arcade game, is the Sega Master System. But the Spectrum version's not bad. It's not the greatest conversion, but I used to enjoy it. I mean, I haven't played it in years because I haven't got it working on emulation, but I think it's not a bad little game. You know, maybe one of you guys can tell me different, but yeah, that's the game that we had for Q. So let's move on to our next game then. And that next game is... and it's RoboCop. Now, this is probably in my top 3 favourite ZX Spectrum games, and definitely in my top 10 favourite games ever. Now, what Ocean managed to do with this license is just unbelievable. This did come out on the Amstrad, the Commodore 64, the Amiga, the ST, the Arcade. But of all the different versions, I prefer the ZX Spectrum. From the moment, if you load it in 128K, it's got the Prime Directive, it's got amazing sampled speech, and then the game begins, and it's like a little left-to-right sort of shoot-em-up. It's not overly difficult, you might die the first few times you try and do that level, but the more you practice, the better you get, and you can get past that level of hardly ever getting hit. And then you've got other levels where you've got to sort of like do like the police sort of like face mashup, where you've got to try and sort of like find the baddies, and it really follows the plot of the movie. The movie was fantastic, written by Paul Verhoeven, and what they managed to do with this license is grab all the best bit of the film and really make it work on the ZX Spectrum. Like I said, this is better than the C64, better than the Arcade, better than the Amiga, and it's got that amazing music. Now, the music, which I think was done by Jonathan Dunn, he eventually did the Game Boy version, which is sort of like it's like the ZX Spectrum version with a mixture of the C64, because you've got to jump on that one, and they used that music for the Ariston advert. But regardless, the ZX Spectrum AY music is phenomenal. Some people prefer this more than the C64 version. I think that can be a debate for another show, I guess. But yeah, I love this game. I can finish this game in under half an hour. It's a game that I always go back to because it just reminds me how much I love this game. And this game was so awesome when it came out back in the day. It spent, I think, over 2 years at the Christmas number one slot. Two years at the number one slot, from one Christmas, two Christmases later, it was still there. It was still there when RoboCop 2 came out, and that was nowhere near as good. But one of the best games I've ever played is RoboCop and the ZX Spectrum. Right, so next up then, what have we got? We've got another arcade conversion, and I previously mentioned this before, and that is Shadow Warriors. Like I said before, Shadow Warriors, the arcade, was a two-player scrolling beat-em-up. Basically, you were a ninja, one was a blue ninja, one was a red ninja, and it's up to you to go from left to right, beating the crap out of baddies. What did draw me to this, apart from the guys that looked like Jason from Friday the 13th, was that it had interactive backgrounds, similar in a way to Double Dragon, I guess. This was the gimmick that I enjoyed. You could have lampposts, and with the lamppost you could sort of swing onto the lamppost and hit the baddies. You could bounce off like telephone boxes and just jump off things. On the second level, when you think about the arcade, it doesn't sound that impressive, but when you think of what they managed to do in the ZX Spectrum, it is amazing. The second level is you've got to cross this road by the traffic lights, and these cars are incoming towards you. And again, what they managed to do with the ZX Spectrum, a full colour game with a big black outline all over the sprites, and the game plays pretty well. It's not as good as Target Renegade, but a lot better than Double Dragon on the ZX Spectrum. But what is really amazing with this game is the size of it. It's huge. Now, Double Dragon on the ZX Spectrum, it wasn't a big game anyway, but this is a lot bigger, and the graphics are a lot more colourful. And it seems more complete of a game, really. Like I said before, this is when arcade games were starting to get that little bit bigger, and what they managed to do with this game is unbelievable. I put a thread on the forum, was like, what games do you think really push the system to its limit? And I think this game did. I mean, I'm not really a big fan of the arcade game now, because it's just boring, it's average. I think this game works so much better on the ZX Spectrum, because it just wows me when I see it on the ZX Spectrum. Like I said, from the end of level Guardians, which are big, colourful, to the title music, to just the way things explode when you like crash them, swing on the lamppost. Guys, check it out, Shadow Warriors. It's a lot better than the C64 version, and I'd put it side to side with the Amstrad version, because that's semi-decent as well. So yeah, we'll move on to the next game. Right, so next up then, we have got the best scrolling beat-em-up on the Spectrum, Target Renegade. wow. Now, I absolutely love this game. This game is just phenomenal. I can't say anything bad about this game. This game is perfect. It's up there with the best scrolling beat-em-ups ever. You've got Streets of Rage 2, you've got Double Dragon, you've got Final Fight, and you've got Target Renegade. No word of a lie, the ZX Spectrum version is just amazing. It's not a big game, which is its downside, but it's good, you know? Especially when you think about what they managed to achieve on the ZX Spectrum. Now, Target Renegade is the unofficial sequel to Renegade, which was an arcade conversion. And some people prefer Renegade, but I think it's a little bit limited in what it was, really. You know, it is missing the throw maneuver, you know, I give it that. But the amount of moves you've got at your disposal is just, it's amazing. You've got the punches, you've got the back kick, you've got the knee to the groin, you've got the flying kick, you can punch people on the floor. And again, it's one of those famous debates, the 8-bit wars, which version was the best? You know, I know a lot of people forget about the Amstrad version, that was pretty good as well. But a lot of people go on about how amazing the C64 version was. And to be honest with you guys, that version is complete and total poop. It's horrible. It's got amazing music. The visuals look nice until they move. And then you realise that you can't knock players down. You just hit them and then they just sort of edge backwards a little bit. It's absolutely horrible. I remember like Malk from another podcast. He said, oh, you know, C64 version so much better. The ZX Spectrum's terrible. And I was like, have you played the ZX Spectrum version? And Zenzel was like, no. So it's like, how can you hate a version which you haven't played? Now, I've played all the versions of Target Renegade, and by far, the best version is the ZX Spectrum. I love the music. Although the music is overly used, you've got, I think, levels 1, 4, and whatever are all very similar. But I like the variety of characters. Later on, you can't just fly kick characters. Some characters are ducks, so you've got to fly and kick them and then quickly back kick them. You've got dogs to kick or punch. You can use sledgehammers. You can use all manner of different weapons. This is just an amazing game. Absolutely fantastic. I can't praise this game enough. You know, the music is amazing. Absolutely stunning. Right, so next up, we have got The Untouchables. Now again, The Untouchables is one of those games that I think did right with the license. You know, I remember playing the demo of this originally, and I think the level I played on the demo was sort of like a shooting section, similar to Operation Wolf, you know, but I liked the fact that it was set in the olden days, you know, in America, and you could shoot things. You had to sort of like move your little cursor around and just shoot things. Now, bear in mind, guys, I haven't played this game in ages. It's getting to the stage now where I'm thinking of letters, like we've got UV and a few other obscure letters coming up, that it's kind of hard to find a game. And Untouchables, yeah, I played it back in the day, probably more on my cousin's Amstrad, but I never really played it on the ZX Spectrum apart from the demo. So I'm not really going to natter on too much about it. Maybe it's something I'll remedy and pick it up. I do know it does vary, and it's a nice license, and I've never actually seen the film, which I probably will do at some point. Right, so moving on to the next letter. Again, it is Vindicator, which, to be honest with you, again, I haven't played that much. It's one of those games that I think I love the music because Swainy played it on one of our early shows as their Music of the Week, and I've really enjoyed the music, so the music's probably playing in the background. If I remember Vindicator, it was like an unofficial sequel to some game. I can't remember, guys, so maybe you guys can fill me in on this. It's getting a little bit late now. It's like 1 o'clock in the morning as I'm recording this. I've left this the last minute. I've had family over and stuff. But again, it's a game that I will try and remedy and play at some point and just give it another go. So we'll move on to the next letter then. And we've got W, which is Way of the Exploding Fist. Now, this is a game that I can talk about. Okay, let's be honest, guys. It's not as good as the C64 version. Okay, but you know what? The C64 version is just awesome. Okay, straight away I'll say it. It's got the audio, it's got the sound effects, it's got the color. But the ZX Spectrum isn't a bad game despite all that. The graphics are really nicely animated. They're bigger than the Commodore 64. The background looks pretty nice as well. It looks like it's all been doodled on. You know, it's got a nice hand-drawn style art. And all the moves are there, like I said. And I love it. It's probably, I prefer it more than International Karate on the ZX Spectrum. I think it's easy to do the moves. And it's, I like the way, rather than just sort of like hitting each other till your energy runs out, what I like about Way of the Exploding Fist was, like, you got your different yin-yang things, so depending on how you hit them or where you hit them, you score points, and you get half a yin-yang or, like, a full yin-yang, so it can vary. And it's just simple, you know, the way you can just move back to block, and it's just something which feels right, you know. It sort of, like, predates Street Fighter 2 in a way. But again, all these games were sort of loosely based off Karate Champ, and I think on the ZX Spectrum, Where the Exploding Fist is probably the best one, then IK Plus, and then probably YR Kung Fu, and then after that, there's not many one-on-one beat-em-ups, really. But yeah, I absolutely love this game. I never finished it. I don't know if it's got the, you know, like the little ball thing like the C64 version has, which you can punch in the face or, you know, do a little somersault over, but it's one of my favorite games as a two-player game. Absolutely love it. Right, so next up then, Xenon. Now, this is a game, again, that I never really played loads. You know, I never knew it was actually on the Spectrum. Didn't realize this was the prequel to Xenon 2. Obviously, the name's still there, you know. But it's a little basic shooter. I'll be honest with you guys, I'm not really that impressed with it. At this point, I was trying to find games that had an X in them, and Xenon was the only one that I remember playing briefly. And so all I can say is it's not that great. Again, maybe you guys can tell me a little bit different. I just thought it was a bit average, actually. You know, it's nowhere near as good as Xenon on the Amiga, you know. So we'll move on to the next one, which is Y. And for Y, we've got Yogi Bear. Now, I love this game. I really do. It was one of the first few games I had on the ZX Spectrum. And I think it was done by Hi-Tech. I'm not too sure. I just remember, like, sitting down, having a cup of tea, waiting for the graphics to load. And, you know, like on the loading screen. And then when the game started. And the whole story was that a hunter has kidnapped Boo Boo. And you've got to go through Jellystone Park and try and find him. I remember there was something about toffee apples that you had to find. You had to find pieces of a map so you could try and find him. You could turn into a bush. Your head would disappear if you did a certain move. I don't know what good that was. Every so often as well, your energy starts running low. So you had to steal fish from the fishermen. But if you timed it wrong, the fish hook would kill you. You could steal picnic basket, obviously. And, you know, you get chased by loads of unhappy campers. There's animals. And, of course, there's the ranger. I can't remember what his name is, the ranger. But, you know, he chases after you. And it was a good game. I'm sure, you know, I've seen a walkthrough of it on YouTube. Because I just wanted to see if it was possible. And it is possible, you know, believe it or not. It's a great game. I love just picking up and playing it. It's one of those games I know I never finish. But it's just, I like to get that little bit closer to finding Boo Boo, because every time you move onto a screen or whether you go through caves, it tells you how many screens away you are from Boo Boo. So I don't think I've actually got that close to him. But again, it's a tough game, really. I've really enjoyed it. It's probably the best Yogi Bear game I've actually played. Now, last to finish this game off, we're going to talk about Zed, and we've got Zorro, and I love this game. Now, I think it might have been done by the same company that did Bruce Lee, because the graphics are somewhat very, very similar. Now, unlike Bruce Lee, which was too easy, this has got some puzzle elements to it. So it kind of feels like Bruce Lee. You know, your princess or maiden has been kidnapped, and it's up to you to go and rescue her. and you've got to solve all these puzzles. I mean, it's got some really strange puzzles. I mean, it's got this one puzzle where this guy is really, you know, you got to give him some beer. You give him some beer, he passes out, and you can bounce on his stomach. And it's just crazy things like that. And then it's got like another bit as well when you're higher up, that you're sword fighting with a guy, you know, just like you do in the movie, and you push him off a ledge, and he falls off the ledge, and he falls onto this hook thing, which in turn lifts like a bale of hay. It did have a really tough part where you had to, you're in the dungeon section, and you just had to go through a certain path, and I remember that taking me forever trying to get out of that. I used to be able to do it back in the day, I can't do it now. It's a fun game. I might give that another go, to be honest. You know, it's really fun. So guys, thank you so much for listening to the Retro Asylum podcast. I do apologise if it does sound a little bit raw. I've had a few things that I've had to sort out family wise which I won't go into, but I had to get this podcast out for you guys. You know, I'm really determined to do it. I'm going to edit it all on the same day. We have got an amazing episode of Retro Asylum podcast next week for episode 71. We have got Uniforex interviewing Andy from funstock.co.uk. For the rest of the year, we've got some amazing shows lined up, guys. We've got some amazing interviews from other people, from other retro gaming sites, other retro gaming podcasts. We've got the live shows. We've got so much, you know. I'd like to thank everyone for, you know, getting us the number one slot and really supporting us. So, guys, thank you very much, and I'll speak to you next time. Goodbye.